myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real.
Welcome to Comadres y Comics.
Hello, everybody. This is episode number 10. Thank you guys for listening.
Yay.
We are your hosts. Welcome back, guys. I am Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jennifer.
Hello, guys. Well, I'm very excited for this podcast because we're going to do a free giveaway at the end of this podcast.
Hey.
A little task for our listeners. And we're drinking two beers today.
Yay.
Nice.
And we're reviewing a really cool book. So I'm very excited. Let's get this started. So what's el chisme de la semana?
Well, I'll start with my chisme. This is Kristen. And it relates to one of our previous episodes where we discussed George Perez's Wonder Woman Volume 1. I remember we all loved it. I recommend the crap out of it when I'm in the shop and somebody's interested in a Wonder Woman story. And I just loved it. My chisme is that George Perez's Wonder Woman Volume 2 will be available in June.
What?
Hey! Oh my god!
So cool. It's in this month's previews. So if you're interested, keep a lookout in June. It will be coming, and when you read a little bit of the little excerpt of what's going to be coming in that book, it just sounds super cool and interesting. And we all know that George Perez does Wonder Woman justice.
Absolutely.
But single-handedly saved Wonder Woman for me.
Yes. So it's a collection of more of the 1980s stuff that he wrote, and it says that it begins with Wonder Woman battling Silver Swan, which is I'm assuming a villain, but I've never heard of that one before. and Zeus plans for Olympian gods to find a new home among the stars. The Amazons decide to open their island home of Themyscira to visitors for the very first time.
Yeah.
And apparently there's a murder that Wonder Woman has to deal with of one of her closest mortal associates. So it sounds like there's a lot of cool, interesting stuff now that Wonder Woman has come to man's world and what she's left behind. But totally, it's George Perez, so I'm all about it. So I'm kind of excited about it.
Same. That's definitely something I'm going to buy.
So cool, dude. We can continue in volume form instead of, like, issues and get the full story. I love that. That's my favorite thing. Definitely.
All right, I'll go next with my chisme. This is Jen. And my chisme, some of you may have already seen it around, but it, in regards to Disney's new line of live-action adaptations of their princess movies, for Mulan, the dirt is Shang Li's character, I'll Make a Man Out of You, the character who sings that, who's, like, basically the
general?
The general, he might not, there was a piece of script released that basically eliminates his character. He's not going to be in the movie. It's rumors, but there was someone got a hold of a script and they released it, and his character is not in there at all. It's going to be, it might be replaced because nothing's substantial anymore, but if they do take that character out, I'm washing my hands free of that movie.
Doesn't he play the love interest in the animated adaptation?
Yeah, he's the love interest. So they're, like, completely overhauling the love interest. And, like, really? Like, he was my fave. He is my literal fave. So, like, the fact that they're doing that is honestly so, like, frustrating.
Yeah.
The other chisme is that there might not be any music, any songs.
That's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm. And that was my main thing about the Cinderella movie one. Like, it looked great. I have a lot of issues with it, but, like, visuals, it looked amazing. Mm-hmm. Those costumes, I would kill somebody for one of those costumes. Like, I would, like,
right? Kate Blanchett's olive dress with the yellow highlights.
Kate Blanchett's everything.
Oh,
like,
God,
in every outfit.
I haven't seen any of this.
Yeah.
Oh. You gotta see it.
You have to see it just for those outfits, because mm-hmm. They are so extra, and I love them. It's mm-hmm. They were so good. But the plot wasn't... Well, it's Cinderella. Cinderella was never very much my favorite. Mm-hmm. But the main thing was just, like, there was no song to that, and people were just like, what the Hades is this?
Yeah.
You know, besides the whole...
Sorry.
Yeah, and so, that's one of the many reasons why I didn't like Cinderella. I went to go see Beauty and the Beast, and again, a lot of the outfits I really, really liked, and I really liked the music and the new songs that they used, and it really added more life to that movie. And come on, Mulan is all about the soundtrack, as well as, like, the story's great, the soundtrack's great, like, who doesn't know I'll Make a Man Out of You?
I want to see real life Mushu.
Yes, Mushu!
Yes.
Come on, Reflections? Like, seriously? Yeah. Like, Christina Aguilera belting that out, like, I have that on my phone right now. Like, I love that song, like, what little girl doesn't love that song?
You know, I wasn't a little girl when Mulan came out, but that movie was one of the first Disney movies. I was like, oh my god, yes, a strong woman coming out and taking over a traditionally male role.
Completely traditionally male. Like,
and culturally out of, you know, she doesn't go along with the culture norms mm-hmm. in her family. And I was just like, yes. And it's really stayed one of my favorite is Little Mermaid, even though as an adult feminist, I'm like, oh my God, what is this crap? But it's still my favorite. I have the whole entire soundtrack memorized. But Mulan was one of the ones, like, as an adult female that I was like, yes, Disney is, like, doing this right.
Killing it. Yeah. But, yeah, and so, these are all just rumors and stuff. There's nothing substantial about it. But a lot of people were saying that that the reason that they were doing this is to wipe away any claims that generally was bisexual, because he did have affection for a king.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
I never would even have thought that.
I
didn't even think that either. I don't know why they go and get all crazy. Was it because of the backlash of the, you know, the, what is it that,
the gay scene in Beauty and the Beast?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't
seen it, but I heard a lot of people who actually saw it. That was like, the hype was nothing. People got upset over nothing.
Yeah, people are... Again, probably to them it's like something like, oh my god, how dare they have, like, men look at each other this way. But honestly, like, I've seen more salacious things, and I'm just like, that's nothing. And it's a very easy thing for Disney to make a stand for, because, like, it was basically nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, calm the fuck down. Like, how repressed are you that bothers you? Apparently very repressed.
I mean, we grew up watching, you know, freaking Elmer Fudd fall for Bugs Bunny dressing up as a female all the time. Like,
that's true.
I never saw it.
Yeah.
Any, you know,
yeah.
It was fine with me. I never gave it a second thought.
And yeah, me either.
It wasn't a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And now, like, this thing is a big deal.
And kids would not give it a second thought either. It's the adults that are crazy.
Kids don't care.
No, they don't.
They really, really don't. Like I said, I went with my siblings. They didn't even realize it until, like, towards the end. They're like, they're a little older, and me and my sister were busy, like, singing along to the movie. But yeah, it's those are the rumors going on for that, and that, and the character who's replacing generally is a character who's supposedly gonna hate Mulan as Ping until they find out that Mulan is a woman. And all of a sudden he doesn't, like, hate her, whereas in the animated movie you can see that he's affectionate towards his soldier, and I'm just like, y'all suck.
Uh-huh. Well, we'll see what happens, but this is very disappointing, I feel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But again, maybe the fact that they're getting a backlash already for this, because it's rumors, but people are already just like, why the fuck would you do that? Kind of like, it doesn't really matter. Like, we want Li Shang, and then hopefully they'll see that, hey, like, maybe we shouldn't do this. And the fact that Beauty and the Beast made a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of money. More than Cinderella.
Mm. I have to say, I don't even remember Cinderella being a thing. Like, right now, I'm listening to you talk about the fact that it was, and it was out, and you saw it, and I'm like, mm-hmm. Where was I?
I don't remember if I saw it in theaters, or if I saw it after on DVD or something. I think I might have seen it in theaters.
I definitely saw it after.
But, okay, I might have, because I remember the screen being very big. That's all I can remember. And I think I went to go see it during matinee. Again, it was just kind of like it was an off day for me, and I was just like, oh, I'm just going to go see it just to see what's up. And mm-hmm. I heard about the costumes. I really, really love costumes. But like I said, a movie can look as great as it wants. It still isn't going to hide the fact that it's garbage.
That is so true. And I actually only saw it. I wasn't really interested in watching it, mm-hmm. although I'm a fan of the animated movies Disney puts out. But I wasn't really interested in watching it until they started saying that her Cinderella's waist in the gown was too thin.
Oh, yeah, she was wearing a corset.
And I'm like, first of all, she's a thin
this
actress.
This sounds familiar.
Yeah, you remember that? It looked like the poster, it looked like she had been Photoshopped, but she wasn't. It was the corset. And I was like,
She had really poofy shoulder.
Yeah, a really poofy dress. And the corset and everything. It made her look like a palo.
Yeah,
like,
her
waist was
really skinny, yeah. But I mean, she had those poofy
sleeves,
like, uh-huh. So that perceptively makes you cinch in the middle really skinny.
Yeah.
Even her shoulders look tiny because her dress was just really poofy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, come on, guys, did you not go to like art class? I mean, I know it's a prerequisite for you to graduate. And I was like, hello.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, and that's the only reason I watched it. And, yeah, you're right. The costumes were really on point.
Yeah, so. And it was the whole reason why Emma Watson didn't want to wear a corset in this one. But, you know what? I'm going to be real. I hated the dress.
Did you?
I hated the dress. It only looked good when it was in movement. And it only looked, like, in movement in the dance scene. And that was when, like, it literally, like, maybe flared out, like when she, like, had that, he had to carry her. That was the only time it marginally looked good. I love Emma Watson. I love Beauty and the Beast. I did really like this movie, but I hated that dress. It was my enemy. I was just like, no.
I mean, it was an occasion to definitely dress up. like you know, she usually wears that blue dress with the little white apron. So I mean, you know,
right.
You'd want to change it up a little.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, that's how I feel. I'm like, if you're gonna give me a chance to wear a puffy dress, I'm wearing a puffy dress.
Hey, isn't that what Keen says are all about?
That's
you,
what I'm talking about.
You go with the most fabulous, puffiest dress there is. I hate them, but I'm just like, when I've been to Keen says where the girl just wears a plain dress, and I'm just like.
Like, dude, when are you? They're like, oh, well, I'll wear a puffy dress on my wedding. I'm like, what if you don't get married?
Yeah,
that's true.
It's
only time, guys.
Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that video that you put up about
the
mariachi version of Beauty and the Beast. And she
that was so cool.
Yeah,
I saw that.
I like that dress, like that interpretation.
Exactly.
Of it.
And it was kind of a little Mexican folklore interpretation of the dress.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, is that better than that movie dress?
It was. hands down, it was. I've seen cosplay where girls have made that dress.
Yes.
And it looks amazing. It looks absolutely fantastic. And then $160 million budget, and that's what you give me? Like, goddamn, I wanted gold embossed in there. I want gold and lace. Like, you tell me you spun that gold, like, freaking Rumpelstiltskin.
Nice.
But,
okay, well, hopefully these Mulan...
hopefully they fix up whatever it is that they're doing with Mulan right now. Because when they announced it, and first everybody was saying, like, okay, there better be a bunch of Asian actors. There better be only Asian actors. And I was just like, yeah, it's set in ancient fucking China.
Yeah.
Like...
Sorry, that's cool.
And it's just like, and China was like, you had the Mongols, which are basically the enemies in this. I mean, you can even throw Japanese people in there. You can throw basically the entirety of southern China in there too. Like, you could do a lot. You can do so much, but you cannot deny that this is Eastern Asia.
Yeah, of course.
Even now, it's still pretty homogenous group.
Right, yeah.
So if I see a gringo in there, I'm calling it out. I'm calling it out.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, Disney, sad trombone for you.
Sorry, do you have some cheesemit?
Yes. I am excited because iZombie is coming out April the 4th.
Hey. Ooh, that's soon.
It is actually season 3, guys. I'm very excited. I saw the little trailer, and it looks wonderful. We see in the little trailer, we see Major and Liv, and they're talking about, because now, they know that everybody is a zombie, well, within the group, and then now the detective that is her partner, well, not really her partner, but he's always asking for her help. He knows that there's zombies.
Oh, he does now.
Yeah, and
I'm still behind.
And there's a kind of like a SWAT operative as well. That she, it looks like she's gonna join the group too. So I'm like, yes.
It's a woman.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Nice.
So I'm just really excited because I'm like, yes.
I'm behind.
I've been
on
waiting forever for this to come out because I was like, okay, Jane the Virgin's out, The Flash is out, we got Riverdale now. I'm like, what's going on with that zombie? And they told me that there was going to be a new season, but there was like no date or anything, and I thought maybe they scrapped it.
I always know that iZombie is coming back because Robert Buckley is back in town, and that means he's done shooting, and he is, and the show is soon to come on, and he was spotted in Santa Monica about 2 weeks ago.
Oh yeah,
he's so hot. He is, and he's so nice.
Oh, he looks nice.
He's very nice. Yes.
Oh, that is awesome. So that's my cheese. I really can't say more about it. I mean, I don't know any more than anybody else, but I'm just excited it's back, and I cannot wait to see it. And I think for iZombie, I will check my CW app regularly. Absolutely.
Hey.
Another thing that I like is that my nephew sees it as well, so we talk about it on the ride from his mom's place. I'm like, yes, something more to talk about with him.
I always... surprises me at how many shows are on TV right now that are based on comic books.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so excited about that. Yeah. We're living in a golden age. That's what I keep saying.
Like, yeah. Like, a lot... there's going to be a whole slew of comic book related TV shows that are going to be coming out soon.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I cannot wait. So we are drinking beer today. We are actually drinking, we're drinking two, but our first one is My Bloody Valentine Ale. It's by Alesmith. Alesmith is a brewery that is located in San Diego, California. San Diego. I believe that's the Whale's Vagina for everybody else who remembers that movie.
Sorry.
What? I always said the Whale's Vagina.
What movie is that?
Ron Burgundy. Legend of Ron Burgundy.
I don't know it, but yeah.
Yeah. San Diego. it actually means whale vagina in Spanish. Anyway, I thought that was hilarious. Every time I think about San Diego, I always think Ron Burgundy. But again, this is particular beer is called My Bloody Valentine Ale. It is 6.66%.
Ooh.
666. So what do you guys think of the beer?
I really like it. I was just telling Jen that I'm starting to come around to these darker ales and porters, and they're really, really gaining favor with me. It was never a beer that I would see on a menu and be like, yes, I'm going to try that. But this one's, it's really good. Mm-hmm. I really can taste like at the end, there is like a caramel flavor to me.
Yes.
And, yeah.
I don't want to tell you guys what the flavors. I want to hear what you got it.
I'm gonna admit that I read the bottle.
Yeah.
But I really did taste it.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really like it, a lot, and it has a very, flavorful bouquet, and it's very smooth, it's not overpowering, the flavors all, blend well together.
I like that, initial kind of, chocolate scent, as you're drinking it and you smell it, you could totally take the chocolate into it, and it's kind of a bittersweet chocolate, so it's not too sweet, and it's kind of like a nice, kind of a bitter end to it, which I like.
Yeah,
I like.
There is a little bit of a bitter end.
Yeah, I really do like that one. And I confess that I also she read it out loud, so I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, makes sense. I do love the smell of it. It smells like you said, bittersweet chocolate. And there was a mention that it was also made with toast, and I was that's what I got. I got mostly the bittersweet chocolate. I couldn't taste the caramel, but I definitely, they kind of like, the toast has a taste.
I love toast.
It has not exactly burned, but that kind of taste of like a perfectly toasted bread.
Yeah.
And I really like that, so I'm all for that. Along with like, it feels like I'm drinking like, toasted bread with Nutella, with bittersweet Nutella.
Ooh, that's a nice representation of this beer.
I am drinking bittersweet Nutella on toasted bread. Nice. And I'm all for this.
I know. I was trying to, because you're right, it's kind of like the chocolate caramel flavor, like Nutella, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. I like it.
Yummy.
And it's not very, very, very sweet, so it's I really like that. That part I really like.
Mm-hmm. I don't like sweet beers at all. Like, I'll try a Shandy every once in a while, but it's sometimes just, and then also, I'm not a fan of ciders at all.
Right? I used to have ciders, but then it started to upset my stomach, so I can't drink them anymore.
Oh. Yeah.
I think it's the apple portion of the cider. I don't know why, but yeah. So what do you guys rate this beer?
I give it a full. Like I said, I'm coming around to the darker beers. This ale is really good. I'm definitely becoming a fan. It's not the yummy Belgians that I prefer. So that's keeping me from a rigid, but it's definitely a full.
Excellent. I actually also give it a full. This would be something that I could possibly drink while I eat.
Yes.
Which I wouldn't normally do, but this seems like something that I could do that with. So yeah. I'm going to give it a full.
Yeah, def. I'm going to go with the full as well. As I've mentioned before and as you guys have seen, usually I'm not a fan of the darker beers.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. But I really like this one. It was pretty good. And like I said, anything that reminds me of Nutella immediately has my approval. So I'm going to go with a full. Yeah.
All right, so I guess that's full all around. All right, guys, what book are we reading today? I'm so sorry. It's the beer again. Why am I in charge of this? Every time I drink, I always mess it up. So as we all know, everybody, boys and girls out there in the listening land, Iron Fist came out. We're not going to spoil anything, so don't worry. We're just going to give kind of our 2 cents on the subject, just only because I chose to put it up on the docket because I was thinking that there's a lot of backlash online for this series, so I just wanted to get your 2 cents on it. So, Kristen, what do you think of Iron Fist?
Well, Iron Fist, like you said, it came out this weekend. It was Friday at midnight, and I was awake. I actually took a little nap from, like, 10 to 12. I woke up at 12:30, and I started watching it. And this is what I'll say about that. The first episode I felt was kind of slow, and it kind of got me
Disappointed?
Yeah, at the first one. And then the actor that was, the actors, and I know that based on our conversation earlier, you're not going to like what I say, but the sister Joy and the brother Ward, I was like, they're so annoying. I don't like them.
Really?
In the first episode, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, because they were young kids, right? Were they young kids?
No. They did show some young kid stuff. I don't know what episode it was, but I don't know.
Oh, you're right.
It's just
right.
Because I didn't, you know, I don't know about you guys, but when I watch any new series, it takes me a while to warm up to the characters, regardless of who they are. And that's kind of where I was. And I felt like the first episode was super slow, but I'm like, okay, I'm going to keep going. After the second episode, I wanted to keep watching. And so, that to me was a testament of the fact that I was fully entertained, and it was 3:30 in the morning, 2:30 in the morning, and I was I have to get up early. I need to just go to bed. So I forced myself to go to bed, but I wanted to keep watching. And so I think that is kind of a good indication of the fact that I always say I'm easily entertained. as opposed to my husband, he and I can go see the very same movie, and we both walk out, and someone asks us how the movie was, and I'll be like, oh, it's good. He, on the other hand, will have charts and diagrams and, like, all this, like, intricate, deep, like, analysis. I'm like, what? It was good. So, take that with a grain of salt. That's what my you're getting your Iron Fist analysis from that kind of TV watcher. But I've finished it. I finished it today, and there were some disappointments to me. Like the ending was a little bit disappointing, and some other things throughout were a little bit disappointing. Having read the Immortal Iron Fist Matt Fraction run. Volume one, I wanted, was that what it was?
Yeah, volume one, yeah.
I wanted to, include a lot more of, the awesome, like, story building that we got in that book that I didn't really see in the movie and, in the show, and I wish that we could have, because visually I wanted to see a lot of those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I immediately liked it. I wasn't really sold on the main character playing, the actor playing Iron Fist, only because, he seemed really innocent and wide-eyed.
Mm-hmm.
But as the series went on, I kind of realized that where that character or the way that character sees life in that sense because of certain things that happened to him in the backstory. I enjoy the effects. I really like the music background because it sort of sounds like Tron-ish.
Yeah.
And I love that. And I really like... the little kind of moments we hear, like, old school hip hop.
Yeah.
Because he's a fan of old school hip hop because, for obvious reasons, he has a very old iPod. but I really like that. And, as I was telling, Kristen earlier today, I really love the character Joy because they don't really write her like they usually write women characters where they're very emotional or, want explanation on things or like, oh, why can't you share your feelings with me or make things about themselves. That's what they do with Arrow and a lot with Arrow. And they're starting to do that with, the Flash. So I really hate that.
Yeah.
Although I am a very emotional girl. I mean, I've cried here several times and, you know, but I know that there's a lot of women that are not, you know, and to always type, cast us that way, like always write a character, a female character like that, or they'll try to do like a strong character and then they'll write her as a real emotional wreck, sort of like what they did with Olivia Pope. But anyway.
Oh, there's some beef there. I see. Yeah, there's some salt there. I knew it wasn't the only salty one.
I'm like, she was so, like, on it for the first season, and then, like, she's all like, I'm in love with, you know, whatever. Anyway. but, no, I really enjoy that about Joy. I enjoy that about Claire, the nurse. She needs to come more often. Right now she's doing in several episodes of Iron Fist, which I really like. I like the backstory. I've never read any Iron Fist comic books, but now I'm really eager to do so because there's a lot of things that I'm missing as far as characters and who's coming into the story and what that means to the character and the full story in the whole. But I really like it. I really do. And I was telling Kristen that there's a lot of, we were talking about how there's a lot of people talking on Facebook that this sucks and it's not very good and blah, mm-hmm. blah. And a lot of people are comparing it to Batman or kind of like telling Arrow's story all over again. I think that it's a really good show. It's not always going to be a win-win with these Marvel shows on Netflix. I mean, mm-hmm. you got a good shit, like... Shit, I'm sorry. You got some good stuff like Daredevil, and then you got Jessica Jones, which is not for everyone. And a lot of people will tell you, I didn't even watch Jessica Jones or whatever. I particularly love Jessica Jones. And then you get something like Luke Cage, which everybody loved, and it was amazing. A smashing, wonderful hit. And then you have Iron Fist. So it's not always going to be a win-win. But I really enjoyed it. I really did. I'm on the 10th episode, and I had to make myself stop watching it because I had to wake up early, and I had several other things to do, and I knew if I started watching it on Friday night, I wasn't going to go to sleep.
Yeah.
And then when I said, okay, I'm just going to watch one episode, I ended up watching three. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what to tell you guys. I feel that it's a good series. I really do. I mean, there's other shit out there that is not very good, like that nobody's really, you know, giving them a bad rap for. I think this is really well made, and I really like the writing style. I really like the dialogue. I like it.
Mm-hmm.
That I particularly love it. So I'm excited to see the end. Like I said, I'm in episode 10. So
I think that maybe once we've all seen it all the way through, it deserves for us to come back and
absolutely and
revisit it. Because I don't really want to say much. Jen hasn't seen any of it, and I know probably
not.
A lot of you listeners haven't seen all of it or have finished, but I'd like to talk about maybe some of the backlash that has happened about, you know, cultural appropriation and all that kind of stuff, because mm-hmm. it is worth addressing. And I think that it's a topic that keeps coming up over and over again with these comic book adaptations. So I definitely, our first little review is, you know, it's entertaining, it's good, we like what we saw, and go watch it. But I think that for sure there's a lot of things that have to do with this TV show that require a lot more detailed discussion.
Absolutely. And Jen, have you read anything on Iron Fist before?
Well, Kristen runs the comic book group, for Heidi Hill, and, we actually read Immortal Iron Fist, the Matt Fraction run, the volume one, and honestly, if I had not read that one before, I would have zero interest in Iron Fist.
Okay.
I would be, like, I would just be like, I don't give a shit. but as is, I understand why some people are conflicted about this. But I also understand why others are not. And it goes beyond, like, the whole, like, the fact that, like, he's white, he's being cast in the Mighty Whitey trope, and that's why I get that, and it's frustrating and everything. But if it's, because I read that Immortal Iron Fist run, I understand now that a lot of Danny's conflicts as Iron Fist come from the fact that he, that the tensions between him and not exactly villains, but I guess the other people, is the fact that he is the Iron Fist when that title should have been to somebody else, somebody who came from that culture. So I'm going to see Iron Fist. I do want to see it because it's something that I really, really want to see, and Matt Fraction really did make me interested in the whole world-building aspect of it, and I want to see everything else about that. And I want to give a more, like, concrete critique of it, or praise of it, in that manner. But it's Iron Fist in total, like, most of what everybody knows about him is that he is Luke Cage's best friend.
Mm-hmm.
He's Luke Cage's best friend, and he hits stuff with his fist, like, really, really hard or something.
Well, you know, in light of us coming back and reviewing it after Jen watches it, I want to go ahead and read the Matt Fraction so I can have more of an understanding on the character itself, and then we can be on the same page. So
yeah,
I think
that'll
be so cool, because I want to learn more about this character now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we read it in as part of the weekly comic book discussion group that we have at Heidi Ho, and the person who recommended it prefaced it by saying that it was big. It was a volume one, and it was 12. It was 12 issues plus some like one shots. So I think it was like a total of 16.
Yeah.
So it's pretty big. Mm-hmm. And he mentioned that there was a lot of world building, that a lot of backstory, a lot of like mythos and stuff. And he wasn't lying, and it was really super interesting. And it actually, I think, lent itself to helping me understand some of the scenes in the show. And I was like, Captain America, I got that reference!
I love that. That's how I want to feel when I watch it. So I'm definitely going to pick up that book, and I want to be on the same page with you guys. So I'm excited about this. I'm excited about the next episode, and we haven't finished recording this episode.
Yeah.
But yes, definitely. Excellent. Yeah. I'm so glad.
I'll get around to watching it. I'll probably watch it in like one day or two.
Yeah, that's usually what I do, but I just had some stuff planned over, so I couldn't do it. But,
yeah, and I promise I'll actually finish it. Or get close to it.
Yes. Exciting news, guys.
Because, just a little bit TMI, but I never finish anything. Like, I legit never finish anything. I have so many things I need to finish, and, I technically didn't finish Luke Cage. There, I said it. I still technically haven't even finished Daredevil.
What? I can't believe it.
I started season two as well without watching that last episode, and I still haven't finished that one either. I haven't finished Jessica Jones.
Really?
Oh my goodness.
It's always the last.
Jeez, what the heck?
The only things I finish are movies and books.
Okay.
And it's just this is just a thing with me and TV. I don't think I've ever finished a TV show. Like, except maybe not Supernatural. Like, I'm not.
Oh my gosh. Once Netflix came into my life, even before that, before it was streaming and it was just like you had to rent it.
Oh yeah.
I was all about like, binging, series and going from beginning to end. And once I started, I couldn't start another one until I finish that one.
I completely agree. Now that I'm juggling several shows, I think it's my evolution as a binger, you know?
Like, yeah.
Now I can do it. But before, I was just like you. I would just see one series till the end, and then I can continue on to the next.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm a liar. I finished Supernatural all the way up to season 6, and I stopped there. Like, I have not watched up to, what is it, season 12 now?
Oh, my goodness.
Like, I dropped it. I dropped Supernatural. I was just like, this isn't my shit anymore. I technically never finished the BBC Sherlock ones either.
Oh, my God. There's only, like, 3 episodes in a season.
Even when series take crazy, like, left turns out of nowhere and start, like, just totally being a shell of their former selves, I am right there watching it. I watched Lost every single episode to the end. I watched Prison Break all the way to the end, and I am super excited to see them come back. I mean, when I saw those two brothers, when I saw Wentworth Miller and the other guy, I don't remember what his name is, in Flash as Captain Cold, is that Captain Cold?
Yeah, Captain Cold and
some. I don't remember the guy's name.
The fire dude.
Yeah, the fire dude. I was like, oh my gosh! It's the Prison Break brother! And that's all I could see.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I was like, in my mind, they were the Prison Break brothers, like, dressing up.
I like that.
That's hilarious.
That is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm the opposite. I don't stop. I don't give up. I stick with it.
I don't give up.
It's not that I give up. It's just that I...
Life gets in the way.
Yeah, life gets in the way, and then I never return.
Yeah. Me and TV have a very intimate relationship.
No, so. I do too. I mean, I don't know if I would continue if it sucked. Like, for instance, I gave up
that not Happily Ever After, that one.
Once Upon a Time?
Yeah, Once Upon a Time. I gave that up, yeah. But, mm-hmm. you know, I'm usually a stickler, too.
Yeah, actually, I need to go back and finish that one because I was watching that one, and then we got rid of cable, and all of my recorded episodes got lost when we had to turn in the DVR.
Oh, it's on Netflix now.
Yeah, I saw it was on Netflix. So that's on my thing, my list of things to do is to go back and watch it because I really liked it.
Nice.
Yeah. Another reason why I don't finish things is because I always find out how they end.
Oh.
And then that's that extra, like, that always adds that extra little bit of, well, technically the whole hell ends. I mean, I could see it, but I technically already know.
That's true.
But I don't know. It's, like, I never walk out of a movie, maybe because I'm paying for it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so, of course, yeah.
Like, I'm going to see everything. I saw Batman vs. Superman to the bitter end.
I did too.
I think we all did.
And I was going to go see Suicide Squad too, but my husband wouldn't he could never pin him down to go watch it. So as soon as it comes out on Netflix, I'm going to watch it.
Which I probably will, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to watch it. If anything, just for their pyro guy. Diablo?
Oh, Diablo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He seemed really interesting, so I was just like, I want to know Crazy more
Beautiful
about that
Guy?
Dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, Crazy Beautiful.
Yeah. That's how I know him, Crazy Beautiful.
So now, Sarah, you can do your introduction.
Yes. So what are we reading today?
So today we're reading All New Wolverine.
Woo!
It was...
I really like this book, guys.
It was, or it is, a book written by Tom Taylor and, dun-dun-dun, the artists are actually both Hispanic artists. They're from Spain, David Lopez and David Navarrote.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know where that was going. I just saw booyah, and I was like, oh, I may say booyah. Sorry, guys. Technical difficulty.
So we actually... technically chose this trade to read due to all the hype and love that has been happening over the last couple of weeks from the Logan movie and how much we all really loved it. And so we thought it was kind of a nice little segue into reading a book all about the character X-23.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And in our last episode on our spoiler part on the movie Logan, you guys kept calling the character Laura X-23, and I was like, am I missing something? And then I was like, oh, maybe because the other guy's X-24, then they just assume that's X-23, so they're going with it. And then, surprise, surprise, they're like, it's an actual character in a comic book. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so there was actually an X-23 series for quite some time. And she, her first appearance was
in Nyx.
Yeah.
Now, I've never technically read Nyx.
Me either.
But I do know that is her first appearance. But before that, apparently she was actually originally a character from X-Men Evolution.
Yes, I heard that. Okay. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
I'm really interested in finding out all of these comic book characters that have come to be within the comic book world because of their huge success and popularity in animated series.
Mm-hmm. The major ones are Harley Quinn.
Yes, Harley Quinn.
And Phil Coulson.
Mm, okay. Mm-hmm.
Those are now X-23.
Now I can say that with certainty. X-23. Instead of calling her Laura.
You can call her Laura. It's her name.
I know, but X-23 sounds so much cooler.
Yeah.
I'm in the know.
So I had always... X-23 was on my radar of being, of existing, but not until this All New Wolverine book came out had I read anything about her or known anything about her. And although this book doesn't deal with her origin per se, we do get, you know, a little bit of backstory. So I'm really super interested in going back and reading a lot of her story in X-23 or in wherever it is that we get to hear kind of like all of the stuff that goes on when she hooks up with Wolverine and all of that kind of story is really what interests me. Because honestly, in the movie, when he dies,
And she, you know, goes off and leaves him, and they do a funeral and everything. All I could think of was, but who's going to raise her?
Yeah.
like where is she going to get all of this, you know, knowledge and training? Yeah. Because he's the person who does it.
Yeah.
And that right there made me super sad. Mm-hmm. That was one of the things in the movie that I got really sad about. Mm-hmm. I think that the book is a way to kind of, for me, to make up for that so that I can kind of read it and know what the history is there.
Well, I really appreciate you guys bringing that book to me. Like I said, I didn't know who X-23 was. I really like how you actually see a relationship with Wolverine Logan in this book, per se. You just get a little bit of a flashback, but I think it's enough to kind of show
how their relationship
was. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I really like that. And I don't know about you guys, but when I read Wolverine dialogue, I think about it as the Wolverine animated series X-Men voice. It's not Hugh Jackman. I don't know why.
Well, because the look in most of the comic books isn't a Hugh Jackman look.
Yeah, yeah.
It's how he's been drawn for ages.
Right.
A short, hairy dude with funny hair.
I read it in a... It's not Hugh Jackman's voice either. I read it in, like, a gruffy, like... And everything, even though it's not written, I end all the sentences with bub.
I like that.
I think of... when I read it, I think of the X-Men Evolutions Wolverine.
Mm.
And also a combination of, like, grumpy uncle voice.
Yes, grumpy uncle. That is almost a perfect description of Wolverine, grumpy uncle. That's so funny.
True.
And this, I have experience with this because my uncle is very grumpy.
Grumpy uncle.
Mm-hmm. That's funny. So, with all new Wolverine in this story, we see Laura is basically being approached by who is it that's approaching her for their help?
No, she's not being approached. She's approaching someone.
Oh, she's approaching someone. Mm-hmm. That's right. So basically, we have this book, All New Wolverine. The story arc is called The Four Sisters. So you get right off that we're going to be introduced to four sisters in this book, and it turns out that these four sisters are creations of Alchemex, who were cloned from the clone. They were cloned from Laura Kinney's DNA, and they're basically trying to recreate her.
Mm-hmm.
And then craziness ensues.
That's a good way of putting it.
So, because if you've seen the movie or if you've read any of the character books, you know that Wolverine and X-23 were created to be weapons.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And so they're trying to recreate, Alchemex is trying to recreate what they saw as a success from X-23 and use her DNA to try to create other quote-unquote weapons. Mm-hmm. And you kind of see in the movie all of the children that they're basically, that's what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
They were using mutant DNA to try to recreate what was already existing.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, pretty much having them from children to actually mold mm-hmm. them to be just straight weapons.
Right.
But they mm-hmm. didn't account for them actually being partly human.
Right.
Which, of course, they're feeling. They have all, you know, a myriad of emotions and so mm-hmm. forth.
Right. And so I know there was more than the four sisters, but the four sisters are the ones who are able to survive. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in this story, what we see is... we see that they're all, like you said, they are all cloned from the clone, so they all look alike,
mm-hmm.
and they're all different ages. So like when you see them, they're like they look exactly alike, but you can almost see
tiny differences
mm-hmm. like of age and so forth. And some of them have different hair color, but mm-hmm. they're all basically the same one. So when they kind of make a reference that I'm pretty much looking at myself, kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
sort of like. will I see you again? Yeah, of course you will. Just look in the mirror, yeah. You know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Which I thought was really cute. But I really love this character. I love how the story flows. I love the writing style because mm-hmm. there's a lot of like quips and a lot of, I really like the sass each one of these characters has.
Yeah.
I love that.
That's one of the things that really endeared me to Laura when I first started reading All New Wolverine. She is, I mean, you see the cover art here. She is 100% Wolverine. She's her father's daughter. But she does have this, I mean, one of the reasons I want to go back and kind of read the actual mentorship that happened is that Wolverine works with Laura when he first takes her in to really tap into her humanity mm-hmm. and to not, like how he says in the movie, don't be who they made you to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you really get a lot of what she's going through in this book, because that's what she was taught from her quote-unquote father, mm-hmm. And he was able to, or he tried to instill that in her, and how to use her her powers and her Wolverine-ness for good.
Yeah,
and you see her struggle sometimes still because she's able to do these things. She's able to be so like savage, but she's trying to kind of
tone it down, control it.
Yeah,
and that's one of the biggest topics in this book is because, you know, she comes across her sisters, and they haven't learned how mm-hmm. to hold back.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So she's constantly like sort of trying to mother them and say, mm-hmm. "Don't do that.
Yeah,
don't do that."
She definitely takes on the role of like older sister.
Yes,
absolutely. Like I was definitely feeling that. I was just like, "When you're just trying to rein in your siblings and they just don't listen."
Like when definitely spoiler alerts, but we do have some cameo appearances in this story arc. We have Doctor Strange, Laura and the four sisters go to visit him because they need his help. And it's so funny because when they go in, and each of the sisters have their own individual personalities as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so there's one who is just very, like, uncontrollable, and all the other sisters know it. And it's funny when they go in and Laura just tells them, don't touch anything and don't shoot anything.
Don't shoot anything until, you know, nothing.
I think her name was Bellona.
Yes, I think
Bellona.
So.
Yeah, Bellona, that's right.
Yeah. I was thinking that because it really reminded me, it looked like a combination of Belladonna.
Yeah. Every time I saw it, that's what, or every time I read Bellona, that's what I thought in my head.
So just to go back, there's Bellona, there's Gabby. And then there's Zelda.
Zelda. Right. I know that one because I was just like, Zelda.
And, of course, Laura. Mm-hmm. So they actually, like you said, they go to see Doctor Strange because for some reason these they refer to them as experiments and property.
Yes.
Throughout, mm-hmm. Like the people that are tracking them down constantly refer to them as experiments or product or weapons. They don't refer to them as women
or people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like in the movie when the guy chastises the nurses for treating the children as children.
Yeah.
They're like, think of them with patents and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I was just like,
right? I'm like just thinking about it. You can't. but that's one of the things that they keep telling each other, and you know they don't refer them as people at all. But with Laura, she's basically the one, I guess, the specimen that it, you know, kind of cleared everything. Like she has like the skill, she has the intelligence, you know, the will, everything, and so that's why they created these other ones from her DNA. But these don't have the healing factor.
Right.
And I'm talking about them like products. Anyway, these other ladies don't have the healing factor, and they're actually,
they don't have the blades either.
They don't have the blades either. They just basically, I guess, are kind of trained in
combat.
Yeah. And one of the most interesting things that becomes a story, propels the story, they don't have the ability to feel pain either.
Oh, that's the key point, I think, because they're able to keep going without having to stop because of pain or anything, which I thought was... I'm like, why is that? And that actually makes them angry because
they want to feel, because the thing, because they can't feel pain, they also can't really feel emotions.
Yeah.
Now you can see that they feel something, but I'm guessing that it's a very, very muted, and you can obviously tell that one of them feels rage.
Yeah.
And so like, and rage is an emotion. So it's whatever it is that makes them not feel pain also mutes their emotion and their conscience or whatever. But it's it definitely becomes a major plot point, and they find out why for sure with Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Which then coincidentally leads them meeting with the Wasp.
I knew you would be excited about that.
I know. I was. I love Wasp so much. Tears. And I really love that. And to me, Wasp has always taken her job more seriously than Hank. in what she does. And one of my favorite scenes that you can see that is after they, because of, they find out what it is that that is causing them to like not feel pain and everything, and they go ahead and go try to destroy it. That consequently leads to the force that's after them to track them down, and they kind of like invade the Hank Pym laboratories. sorry. And they don't kill anybody, but one of the sisters, spoiler alert, does die. But they leave the guy who did it alive, and he makes his way back to the secret bunker where everybody else is, Alchemix, right? He's hiding, and when he gets there, he's just like, oh, I managed to get away, and they're like, you fool! Yeah. You didn't get away! You're not gonna survive, like, Wolverine and a founding Avenger, and I was just like, yeah, boy, you know!
Yeah, he's all, you know, and like I said, I really love the writing. There's these little, you know, dialogue things that I just find so clever. So he's like, so our not-so-secret location is not a secret anymore. Like, it's just so cute the way they, well, I guess cute is a bad, is a bad representation of what I'm trying to say. It's just so,
endearing
and upbeat kind of writing. I really like it. It's not like, I don't know. It has a voice. It has its own personality, this dialogue. The way that the writer is writing this story, I really like it.
Okay. And I would be interested to go back and read, like I said, more early stories, because I really want to know how much of that is the writer, but how much of it is her character that has been, kind of developed in the past.
That is true. I didn't even realize that.
Because I've read characters written by different writers, and while they all have their own personal writing style, it really is interesting to me how they all try to hold on to the characterization of the character. And one of the ones that comes to mind is Deadpool. Deadpool is Deadpool, and when you're a writer writing Deadpool, you know what you got to do with that character. Yeah. And so I'm interested to kind of go back and see what that means for Laura's character.
Yeah, like, was this keeping in continuity with what her character was? Or was it like a radical change?
Yeah. Like, for example, Captain Marvel during the Civil War II.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Bendis, you fucked it up.
So, yeah. For those of you who haven't read Civil War II, my own personal take on that was that Captain Marvel's character was just completely different than what I had read. I've only read DeConnick's run, Kelly Sue DeConnick's run of Captain Marvel, and that's what I had to go on when I started reading Civil War II. And just the things that Carol was doing and saying, and like the the actions that she was taking, I really felt were out of character. And so, and it really bothered me. So I blame the writer.
I'm not only going to blame the writer, I'm also going to blame it in, like, in continuity wise that she was replaced by Skrull.
Oh.
Yeah. Literally the only possible way that she could have taken those actions and everything.
Yeah.
If she was replaced by a Skrull. That's my headcanon now, and if it comes true later on, I called it. You heard it here first, folks.
she had a Captain America Nazi,
Yeah, that's another one.
Yeah, she had a Captain America Nazi episode.
Nice. And then we also have an appearance from S.H.I.E.L.D. in this book, remember?
Oh, yeah,
that,
yeah.
I was really, very brief. It was really brief. I really liked the way they, in this particular story, this volume one, I really like how they have a lot of, like, ties and, guest appearances, sort of.
Yeah.
Like, guest appearance. Yeah, that was really nice. I really liked that about this story. I just love this. I love the way they wrote the characters. I love the dialogue the characters had. I like the way they all interacted with each other. Mm-hmm. I just, that in itself I really liked. And did you guys even mention the art? Those splash pages are amazing.
Oh my god, the artwork right in this book holds up. It is absolutely, from the way that they draw the emotions to the different characteristics, how you can actually tell the sisters apart, and but you can also tell that they're related.
But they're,
clones of Lara. Yeah. Is just the art was really, really good. I really liked it. Like,
And I'm very, very, very impressed by all the variant covers in the back, too.
Yes.
I'd love to have this Ryan Sook number 4 variant. It's amazing. And yeah. I do have the Michael Cho variant number 5. I love all of Michael Cho's Marvel variants.
One of the characters that I didn't, I don't have any familiarity with, and I wanted to ask you girls, Taskmaster.
Taskmaster, yes.
Did I just, as a character, I felt he was cool, but what's up with the shield with the T on it? That's all I have to say about that.
It's the fact for he's a Taskmaster, and I think, I don't remember what, but... No, you know what? I don't remember.
But he's he's an actual character that exists within this universe kind of thing. Because that's the first I've ever heard of him.
You know, it's just... I'm not going to lie. And I know, I've worked at a comic book store for years now. And I know, like, oh my god, this... But I keep confusing Taskmaster with not only Deathstroke, but also, like... Almost like Deadpool, Deadshot, dead something else, and like I know DC, like, oh my god, how can you confuse him? But legit, and who's Stephanie Brown's dad? The dude who also has like kind of like a hockey like mask in DC.
I can't think of who you're talking about.
Whatever, her dad too. Like, this is like he blends in with all these other characters, and I was just like, I wanted, sometimes the only way I can tell him apart is the fact that his mask is a skull, but then I think Skeletor. I think Skeletor, and I'm just like, he can be Skeletor.
Yes.
Skeletor is Skeletor.
That's
but
exactly.
I still get confused.
I mean, look at, every time I saw him in the book, I was like, that is Skeletor.
And I know I've seen that kind of figure before, and I was like, I've never read up on this guy. I don't know who he is.
Well, his first appearance was in the Avengers 195, which came out in 1980.
Mm-hmm.
He was created by David Michelinie, the writer, and artist George Perez.
What?
What? George Perez, what? Once again, bringing it full circle. Shout out to George Perez.
George Perez. But that is so random. He does look like, you know, a kind of crazy, bright, medieval-ish kind of wannabe character. Like,
mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I was like, who is this Yahoo?
Well, it
yeah.
seems like he's been back and forth because he's been part of AIM. He's also been part of Secret Avengers and S.H.I.E.L.D. and Thunderbolts.
Yeah, he's a bit of an anti-hero character, and he's kind of funny. He's a... this is why I keep confusing him with like Deadpool and all these other characters, just because he has a sarcastic humor, because I have read him in other stuff, and he's a sarcastic dude, and he's a mercenary.
His abilities are like, he has a ton of them, and they're really unique. He's a genius level intellect.
What?
An expert tactician, Olympic level conditioning, master hand combatant and martial artist, skilled swordsman and marksman, photographic reflexes, physical movement prediction, voice mimicry, and master of disguise.
Talk about a fucking Mary Sue character. Jesus Christ.
You know, he has the potential to be kind of extraordinary, except that outfit, guys.
he's Skeletor.
I couldn't get past his outfit. I'm just like, what? Because he was actually tasked with the objective to actually come after the girls.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He was supposed to leave Laura alive, but he was supposed to like get rid of the mm-hmm. other ones.
Mm-hmm. And he was just like, look, I have no beef with you and whatever. But
I know.
Like, he should have realized that she's Wolverine's daughter, and once she's pissed, she's pissed.
Exactly. So I mean, and I really liked their little fight. Of course, one of the things that I caught my attention on this character was, of course, the outfit. Second thing was that he said he could mimic fighting styles. Uh-huh. So he goes, fighting, and this is one of the things I liked about the art, was as they were fighting, he's like, you can't. You know, you can't beat me.
Right.
I know what you're like. Yeah, within the movements, mm-hmm. like he was mimicking and blocking and everything. Of course, he didn't account for the blades, but whatever. But
they always forget.
I know
about the foot blade. The foot blade strikes again.
And so I thought he was pretty interesting because he had mentioned that was part of his I guess combat skills, was that he can mimic and he can foretell when your next fighting move will be. So I was mm-hmm. like, who is this guy?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it says here, too, that he most notably, he's an enemy/ally of Deadpool.
Yeah.
So I think that would actually be really some good storylines to read with them, too.
Okay. That makes me think he probably comes out in Deadpool Classic a lot, then.
Probably. I'm trying to see here, where he's come out.
Oh, yeah, the bibliography.
Yeah. Deadpool, Volume 1, Number 2, 35, 39 through 40, 67 through 69, and then also Cable and Deadpool.
Mm. He is Batman in a Skeletor outfit. He's Marvel's Batman in a Skeletor outfit, as opposed to Moon Knight, who is Batman in a white outfit with somehow without funds. and he travels in a limousine.
I just thought maybe they should make as I was reading it, I was like, maybe his outfit should be a little bit more relevant to today's standards. But I mean, you know, it stands to be like he's an interesting character, and he stood out for me in the story. Even though he has only, like, what, about 3 pages in the story?
Yeah,
but I thought it stood out to me.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the way they were talking as they're fighting. And I liked the way the art really brought that to life for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what stood out for me with the art and the splash pages, which I totally love.
Mm-hmm.
I totally love those. Especially that one splash page, sorry, where the panels were at an angle, and they went across 2 pages.
Yeah.
And
I was, like, in love with that scene. I'm like, my God, this is... I'm sure other comics have done it before, but I really like this one.
Yeah.
I really love the way they drew the dynamic fighting scene across 2 pages in a slight angle. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm like that's all I got to say about that.
No, that was really good. I enjoyed that a lot. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed about this book the fact that at this point in time in the Marvel Universe, Wolverine, spoiler alert, is dead. And we really see Laura trying,
I feel like what we're seeing here in this all-new Wolverine is Laura trying to really deal with all the emotions and feelings that that entails mm-hmm. by kind of taking his helm, not just by wearing his uniform and taking on the mantle of Wolverine, but by taking these young girls under her wing and trying to help them and to guide them.
Mm-hmm. She's trying to do what Wolverine did.
Mm-hmm. I really like the way this story conveys how she feels about trying to rescue these girls. They might be damaged goods because of all the experience they mm-hmm. had of all, mm-hmm. you know, how mistreated they were, how they were treated, and how they were used, and how they've always been known as not human.
Right.
Just some kind of creatures or whatever, weapons. So I really like the way this story conveys her... how she feels she is like them. She said that. Mm-hmm. They're me.
Yeah.
They are me.
Yeah.
And especially when they went to go see Doctor Strange, and he uses a magic and a stone to look within the girls, each girl. Mm-hmm. He sees their innermost memories and what they've done before, and that's how he was going to see if he was going to try to help them out.
Right,
or not.
Yeah.
And then he was like, no, man, they're pretty much damaged goods. Yeah. I don't know why you're hanging out with them. I mean, I get it, but I don't think you should. Mm-hmm. And she's like, use the stone on me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, man, that's really powerful.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
you're pretty much opening yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also really just showing people can change.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's like, I did some bad things, mm-hmm. you know, and that doesn't make me a bad person, mm-hmm. you know. And these women deserve an equal chance as well. And I really like that sentiment. I really like the development there. And I really like the fact that she is taking on the Wolverine mantle, but she's not, like, in your face, like, yeah, I'm the Wolverine.
Yeah.
Like, I really like how humble she is about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think she also made a reference on why she dresses like Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
She said, me dressing up like him, I feel like he's still here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really endearing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I loved it.
Yeah,
and one of the people we didn't mention as like it's not really a guest appearance. He occurs throughout the series, but she has a very well known boyfriend.
Oh God! Oh, yeah. I can't believe I forgot to mention. I had notes, guys.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Continue. Yeah. But yes. Yeah.
So Angel is Laura's boyfriend, and I've always wanted to, because you kind of jump right into the storyline where they're together and he's helping her. He's kind of her quote unquote wings. He carries her around in the sky, and
he catches her from falling buildings.
And he catches her from from buildings where she jumped off of. And that was one of my favorite scenes
that,
where she's like, okay. You know, catch me in three. And he's like, just because you start counting doesn't mean, and you don't tell me where you are, doesn't mean you can jump into the air.
Because factor in gravity and the fact that I don't know where you are.
Yeah.
It's pretty dangerous.
Yeah.
So I really would like to know how their relationship developed, because you don't get that in this story. Mm-hmm. And this came out in 2016, and I want to know before that where kind of the history of their relationship was, because it's kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, you said something that it's intense, and also I just think they're really cute together.
Yeah,
and I want to know
so
more.
Odd. Yeah,
give me all the canon Perry.
And you know what? It's so cool that I like about the relation that I thought was really interesting about the relation. Not really like, because I thought it kind of sucked, but. What I really like about their relationship and how you can see it from the expression on their faces,
mm-hmm.
The art is conveying their emotions. So there is a point where he actually drops off Laura. He flies her into her apartment in the Bronx,
mm-hmm.
and then she steps in and she smells something in the air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and he's like, she's like, I think they were making plans to do something later on, mm-hmm. but then when she smelled something, he's like, you know what, you gotta go.
Yeah.
And then she didn't give him any explanation, and it looked like he was used to her kind of like abrupt changes in mood, but when he turned around and left, mm-hmm.
you could see it in his face.
In his face, I was just like,
Yeah, I was talking a little bit about I'm current on this series, and Jen was asking me a little bit about the future of their relationship. And I won't say anything specific other than what Sarah just right now said is completely on point as far as, like, how he feels about Laura and how he is very emotionally invested in this, but it's really hard for him given who she is as a person and her personality, and how he has to try to there. I'll just say that there is a lot of the storyline that is dedicated to their relationship in the upcoming.
That's all you needed to say. I'm gonna keep issues. Reading.
Yeah, and it looks. I mean, just particularly these artists, I feel that they're really conveying that with just the way they draw the face.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I would love to be able to do. Like, mm-hmm. Just reading this book and seeing just the expressions on the face, mm-hmm. That's kind of like a real, they're really raising the bar there, because I feel like the face tells a lot of what mm-hmm. is not said within the story. And I love yeah. that about art,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Particularly in this volume one, I really loved it. There are several other instances where other characters convey a lot from just their expressions. And I think they I don't know if you've, I'm sure you've seen this before, but in this particular story, I see a lot of little lines that they draw, like around the eyes, mm-hmm. or a little bit of wrinkles in the nose, mm-hmm. and stuff that really convey expressions mm-hmm. That are not said within the dialogue, which I think marries the story and the art together yeah. really yeah. well here.
Definitely. I really like that about the art, because, like, when, unlike, I do like polished art, but, like, the main thing is just, like, especially with this one, when you smile, when you frown, when you're happy, when everything, there's lines in your face. Mm-hmm. Your face moves. Like, it's like the muscles that make your skin crinkle, or some parts are smoothed out more often or not. But it's just, like, that's what's really good about the artwork, is that you can see that there's these lines and, like, this is a thing. This is huge. This yeah. is the human face, and it moves. It's in constant motion
yeah.
from blinking eyes to when you're smiling to when you're talking. Like, there's gonna be shadows on the face. There's gonna be lines. There's gonna be wrinkles. There's gonna be even a young character. They're gonna have wrinkles when they smile or something, or like pre-made wrinkles.
Right. Right. And in this storyline, and this story, again, going back to the art, in the story, the sisters, they actually wore masks as part of their combat attire,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
which reminds me of a lot of the masks of No, the agents of the No in Kabuki.
Oh.
It was very kind of, I guess, Japanese-esque
yeah.
mm-hmm. for me. But when you don't see the expressions on the face, they convey a lot in their body mm-hmm. movement, which mm-hmm. I thought was really good, the way they conveyed that out in their art.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that it really, again, married the story very well without having to use the facial expressions.
Yeah.
And that's mm-hmm. something that I really love about artists in comic books, that they can actually convey movement without actually moving, because, you know, it's a book. So
mm-hmm. I mean, comic book artistry definitely is an art in and of itself, just all of the extras that you you have to include to move the story forward. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the writer is writing the words and a lot of times maybe directing the action, but the artist just has so much of the story to tell visually, and I feel like comic book artists are just amazing.
Absolutely. And I think this story, because there's so much action, I think they chose really well with these artists.
Mm-hmm.
I think they really did an excellent job on this book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And all I can say about the issues that come after this is that they're all just as amazing. We have more guest appearances to come.
Ooh,
hey. Like I said, Angel is definitely still part of the story. But one of my favorite issues, I don't remember which issue it was, but one of my favorite issues was a Squirrel Girl Wolverine crossover. It was so good, and I just loved it. And then also you get a lot of emotional inner turmoil from Laura when she meets old man Logan, which is not the same Wolverine who raised her, but looks like him, talks like him, knows a lot of the same things that he did, and that brings up a lot of stuff for her.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And Old Man Logan was happened because of the Secret Wars event that was before Civil War. Just if you guys were wondering how that happened.
I was, actually. I didn't want to say it, but I was.
So there's an alternate timeline where another Wolverine exists, and he's old. And Old Man Logan is that book that is kind of like...
Frank Miller wrote it.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like the...
Was it Frank Miller or Mark? Shit.
I don't remember.
There's too many Millar.
I know, that's what I was thinking. Mark
Millar. There's too many Millar. I'm pretty sure... No. Shit. Fuck. I'm sorry. I should know this. Oh, my God.
But it's kind of set in a post-apocalyptic world. Mm-hmm. And Old Man Logan has completely just lost everything. And the cool thing about this book, which I highly recommend... is that his sidekick throughout the whole entire book is Hawkeye.
Oh.
Yep.
And it's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. I highly recommend. And when we first got the first trailers of Logan, a lot of people guessed that we were getting an Old Man Logan movie.
Oh, okay.
And that's not at all what it was, what it turned out to be. But a lot of people thought that that's what it was going to be.
It was. You can definitely see the influence of the Old Man Logan in the storyline. Yeah. But it wasn't like an Old Man Logan.
Yeah, no.
It was. As opposed to the Old Man Logan. Yeah.
Because we still got an Old Man Logan, but it's not
right.
The old
but
man.
But not the old man Logan.
Comics.
I was gonna say you comic book readers probably understand that, and those of you who don't read, haven't read it, you have no idea what we're talking about.
We're very sorry. Also, it was Mark Millar.
Excellent.
Yeah, but. Definitely read Old Man Logan. It's a standalone story. You don't have to know anything about Wolverine or any other stuff that's going on there that was going on in the universe at that time. It's completely all in and of itself, world and character.
It's the version of The Killing Joke, but with Old Man Logan.
Yes, that's the perfect analogy. And now, and just like Killing Joke, that where it became canon, now kind of the same with him with Old Man Logan. Old Man Logan has now shown up and is participating in a lot of the Marvel series that are out right now.
Oh, cool! Mm-hmm. Right on. Excellent. So, what was your favorite part in this whole book? Not that it's a big book, but it was...
How many issues is it?
Six.
I think
six.
It's six
issues, yeah.
Six issues.
And just to make another remark, I don't know, I remember talking about another book that the feeling, the texture of the pages was amazing.
Yeah,
this is
I remember.
Equally as amazing. I love the feel of these pages. I don't know what kind of material blending they're using, but I love it. Love the fluidity. I love the flexibility. I love it.
had it been George Perez's Wonder Woman? Because they had used a newspaper print.
No, it wasn't that one. I think it was something else. I think I'll look into it. But yeah, these textures, I think it was a Marvel. And I think you did mention that Marvel was using this kind of...
In their books, yeah. Mm-hmm. They're starting with Secret Wars and also Civil War.
I remember.
They came out with a higher quality of paper in their books, and the covers were like thicker and glossy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like this. I like the feeling. I like the rub my fingers on it.
It's definitely better than what they're currently using for the comic books, which is just like standard magazine.
Yes.
That kind of sticks to your fingers. And if you're not careful, the ink will come off.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's terrible. Uh-huh. But this is good stuff.
Their trade paperbacks, they're a bit more higher end.
And also, a lot of, we get some of the complaints about the fact that Marvel trades are more expensive than most other trades too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, but maybe it's
the
quality.
This one, this trade, a 6-issue trade for the most part, usually is about $12 or $14.99, and Marvel's are like $16 and $17. This one's $17.99.
Oh, yeah.
Shoot.
And you know, I've been like consoling people like, oh, this is the reason why, and sometimes I have to like actually take down the comic book and just be like, look, feel it. And they're like, oh, okay, never mind.
See, so it's not just me. Everybody feels the improvement in
texture. Some of them are still like, oh, like, I don't care about quality paper. Just like, I just want
to read the story.
Yeah. Well, then go on Comixology.
Yeah.
99 cents.
An issue. There you go. Go to Comixology. You don't want paper, then go online.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyways, my absolute favorite scene, I know I said I have a lot of favorite scenes, but my absolute best favorite one is towards the end of the book. When we see Gabby and her sisters have kind of gotten their revenge and everything. Oh, spoilers. there had been mentioned in the book before where Bellona and Zelda had said, Gabby's different. She's more innocent. We protected her from most of the bad stuff. And they're like, and then they specifically said that she is what we were all supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And you see this towards the end, because, surprise, apparently Gabby can pull out one claw.
yeah, exactly. We didn't see any of the others having the same the blades or anything.
She definitely doesn't have the healing thing because she does scar, but she has the one claw thing. And I don't think the own people who made her knew about that.
Mm-hmm.
You get that because in the art, the dude is like absolutely like terrified.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, like, yeah, he's about to like, it looks like he's about to get killed and everything. But it's but yeah, they even do the whole sneak thing.
We've gone from 3 with Wolverine, 2 to X-23, and now 1 with Gabby.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
And it's just, that was my absolutely favorite scene, because you can see finally like, what's the big deal about Gabby besides her like innocence? And I really like Gabby. Like, I think she's super cute, and I love her. And the last panel where she's like, bye!
Yeah.
That's literally what sealed the deal for me.
I know.
Like, she's, like, super threatening, and then she's like, bye!
She's super scary. I mean, she even has, like, darkness, like, you know, kind of like a darkened cloud come over her eyes, like, in her expression, and you're like, shit.
Yeah, you can tell. She can be dangerous.
Yeah.
And she's pretty scary in this. Like, her facial features, like, she's pissed.
Yeah.
You can tell. And then it all, like, goes away in that last panel where, like, I literally imagine my sister, like, how she does it. Like, sometimes when she's just, like, she's going somewhere and she's, like, just, like, taking off. She's like, bye! Like, the extended one. That's how I read it. I know it just said bye.
Yeah.
But in my head, I was like, bye!
Yeah, me too. I totally got that from reading that, too. I was like, the way you just see her walk away and just like, bye, and I'm like, yeah, that's totally what it sounds like, even though it was just written as bye.
Yeah.
I mean, because the artist, like we said, are conveying
movement and
she's literally skipping away.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, yes, absolutely.
That's really, really good.
It's totally cute.
And if you love Gabby, just know that she is a huge part of the issues going forward.
Good, because
she's still around.
Oh, good. Yeah, nice, that was my next question.
Yeah. So this is Kristen. My favorite part of the book is literally one small panel in issue 4 when Laura takes the sisters to go see Doctor Strange. And Doctor Strange is talking to her and tells her, you are the right person to replace Logan.
Yeah.
And and Laura's response is perfect. And when I read this, for the first time in the issue, I was like, yes. Oh my! I mean, I remember I took a picture of it and I shared it on my Facebook.
Yeah. I remember that. I just remember that.
And Laura's response is, I know there are people who disapprove. Guys on the internet mainly, but I'm not replacing him. I don't really know what I'm doing yet. And that was just everything to me, because working in a comic shop and also
following certain comic book groups online, I heard it over and over and over again. Why does Marvel have to come in and pander to women and the social justice warriors and take an already developed character and replace it with a woman and give her his name, and that it's just a money ploy, and Marvel, I'm so sick and tired of Marvel doing that. And I would get so frustrated, and this panel was just everything to me. Mm-hmm. Because it was basically the writers and Marvel saying, look, people,
we're not replacing him.
Yeah. And the thing is that what I don't understand, especially with this character, there's other characters that I could go on and on about as well. Jane Foster's Thor. but for this one specifically, she's not taking over Wolverine. She is her own character. She is Laura Kinney. She's X-23. Mm-hmm. She, as Sarah was mentioning earlier, she is doing all of this. She's wearing the costume. She's out there trying to help people as kind of like an homage, as a way for her to deal with her grief of losing her mentor, her father figure. Mm-hmm. And the fact that most of the people, most of the quote unquote guys on the internet who were complaining about it never even read a book was just like
fake nerd. Fake
was fake just nerd. The nail in the coffin of me just being so like, I'm like, you know what? Because I would start to have conversations with these people on the internet, and then when they come out and they're like, well, I haven't actually read an issue, I'm like,
what the
forget
hell?
It. I'm done with you.
Just quit wasting my time.
Exactly. So that was my favorite part of this book. That one panel was just it said everything that I wanted for it to say. And I mean, it's just, she's her own character. She already existed before. She is basically, she has her own story to tell, and I'm all about reading it further. So
not only that, like, this is this is a legacy character. Like, I wasn't really in comics, so I don't know if it was, but now a lot of people that reflect upon it, when Nightwing took over as Batman,
oh yeah,
who kicked up a fuss? Like, it seems like the logical way to go.
Yeah,
it's just like this is a thing that's going to happen, and this is how these characters are going to survive into the future. You know, like if they ever do like actually finally fucking kill them all off or whatever, is that they're prodigies. That's why they're there. They're their prodigies. They're there to take over the role.
Yeah, exactly.
And Kid Flash did it. Nightwing did it for a short while before they kind of retconned that. And now it's happening with Laura Kinney. And it's just, it's a thing, and it's going to happen in some form or another. This is comic books. They can do it. They can redo it. And they can all say, oh, never mind, we regret, and reboot everything.
Yeah.
Calm the fuck down.
Exactly. No, and it's true. And, you know, I actually read X-Men. One of the first titles I read when I started picking up comic books. But having read that and having been really vested in Wolverine as the animated series that we saw, that anyway.
It's gonna be stuck in my head now.
Right. I'm sorry, guys. being and Wolverine is one of my favorite characters.
Same.
I do not feel threatened by her at all. And I really enjoy her story.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to read what else she does.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm in. I'm not and like I said, I'm not replacing Wolverine in my heart. I am just opening myself up to Laura.
Yeah.
X-23. And I love it. I love it. And you guys, if you guys are against it, pick up a freaking book and read it.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say about that. My favorite part was, had actually no dialogue at all. It's when she's having kind of a flashback, and she and Wolverine are looking at each other, and she has, in the expression she has on her face, she's wearing a mask, but
but you can totally see how her little nose is kind of turned up, and her lips is kind of a little pout, because she's kind of like a little kind of teed off. I love it. I love it. I love the emotion there, and he's kind of just sort of looking at her, looking down at her, because she's obviously shorter than him, and that little panel there, I was like, oh, that's totally endearing. That was my favorite part, because you kind of, in that little panel itself, you see the relationship they have.
Yeah.
Sort of like she's, it was really cute. I just felt like
the dialogue that surrounded those couple of pages and surrounded that panel was very, very touching.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I got a whole story and a whole feeling just from those two pages.
Yeah.
Loved it. So definitely, you guys, if you guys are on the fence on the new Wolverine being a female or the new Wolverine having foot claws, you definitely pick up this book, because it will change your mind. It'll change your perspective altogether, and I love it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What do you guys rate it?
I rate it all the conchas. I love Laura Kinney. I love All New Wolverine. It's one of the books that when it comes out, I pick it up off the shelf and read it first. So I give it 3... My favorites are the strawberries, so 3 strawberry conchas and a cup of champurrado.
I agree, although my conchas are chocolate, but yes, 3 chocolate conchas and champurrado, definitely.
I'm going to give it 3 conchas, 1 of each flavor, because I'm a fickle bitch. and a cup of champurrado, because it was really, really good. And also, because I never knew much about X-23. Mm-hmm. I knew she existed, because like Kristen said, I knew she existed, I knew she was a thing, and I'd seen her in some other X-Men books, and kind of got a feel, but I didn't know much about her. Mm-hmm. And this just really introduced me to her character, and I absolutely loved it. It was
Me too. Mm-hmm. I was a complete blank you know, just the movie and this.
Yeah.
So for me, I loved it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And again, I didn't even think she was actually a real character until you're like, yeah, she's a real character.
Yeah. So yeah, good point, actually. If you loved Logan and you want to know more about Laura's character, about X-23, pick up All New Wolverine, and it's a good place for you to jump onto what's going on with that character presently.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I completely agree. Definitely. And like I said, I'm not replacing Wolverine. This is just a whole different character, and she has the ball. She has substance, she has confliction, she has heart, she has skill, and she had a good mentor. So yeah, definitely pick it up, guys. Yep. We were drinking beer while we were reviewing that.
Yes,
we were drinking a Firestone Walker. Yeah, Firestone Walker is a brewery in Paso Robles, California. It's called Fortem. It's called the Leo versus Ursus Fortem. It's Fortem is Latin for the strong, and this one is an 8.2%. It's a New Age Imperial IPA. What do you guys think about it?
Oh my God! When we were talking, I drank my first sip, my eyes got big, and I was like, OMG, this is amazing.
I don't know who was talking, but I looked over to you as you were drinking it, and then your eyes wide. And I was like, I hope that's a good thing.
It is so good. IPAs, for the most part, are very strong, very hoppy. They can really go south if it's not a good IPA. But this one was just so, it was very flavorful. It was hoppy, but not in a good way. It's an unfiltered Imperial IPA.
Not in a good way?
Not in a bad way. Sorry. Oh, yes. In a good way, not in a bad way.
Okay.
And true to form, IPAs, high IBV, ABV. So as soon as I finished drinking it, or even halfway through my little taster, I could feel it.
Nice. And, so are we all going to talk about it before we rate it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. What do you think, Jen?
I liked it. It was,
oh my God. I thought you would. When I first sipped it, I thought, oh man, Jen's not going to like
it. No, I really did like it, because I didn't get, You said that it had hops, but I couldn't taste it. And let me tell you, I do not like the taste of hops. it tastes like dirt to me.
dirt.
But it's don't ask me how I know how dirt tastes. I had a very colorful childhood. But I liked it, and it's just like I can still smell it, and I do like how it smells. It's almost not cherry, but lemony.
Yeah, it's citrusy.
And I've said this before. I really, really do like the citrus one.
Yeah.
And and it was light and IPAs. Yeah, IPAs are another thing that I can be picky about. Because I don't like the taste of hops. But this one was really, really good. And again, I liked the aroma of the first one, but this one is pretty good too. I feel like I could drink this with my brother while we're chilling, like at the beach or something.
Yeah, definitely.
It's almost like it's got a beachy, summery vibe to it. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It has citrus oils and honeydew. I'm thinking honeydew.
Ooh,
melon, yeah. 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 You know, again, I'd actually like to shout out one of our listeners, Compton Eric. He's from a podcast called The Mustache Cash Stash, and he actually supplied us with this brew today.
Sorry, swallowed wrong. that's what she said. it's good. I like it. And the name too, Leo versus Ursus.
Yeah, I knew you would like that one.
I did. Like, I'm a sucker for it. Like, I didn't take those astronomy classes for nothing.
I like that. I actually like this as well. I like that crisp aftertaste.
Oh, yes.
And it's not a lingering hop taste, which I really like too. It's really light. I think it sits better, like, after because we had it in the refrigerator, but after it sat a little bit, and then you took the second sip, I thought it was a little bit more kind of earthy and very calming. I think this is compared to the first one, I think, for me, it feels more mature, like more of a serious feel to it. But I really liked it. I'm going to rate this I'm going to go rigid on this.
Definitely. Yeah. That's what I was going to say, too. It's my first rigid in a very long time.
I know.
Sad seriously. Face.
I'm going to go with rigid as well.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely really good. I like the artwork as well. There is a lion, and he's growling against a bear.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I really like it. I like the font. It's really good. It was a very attractive logo.
Mm-hmm. And I actually have not had a Firestone in a while that I have enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
So this one, people keep trying to make me drink 405 or 805.
Oh, I hate 805.
I hate 805. And it's
with a passion.
Yes, and it's one of the only things that's on tap at some of the, like, divey bars. You go and you ask them what's on tap, and that's one of the things that they have. It's usually that and like an Arrogant Bastard, but there's nothing in between.
Right.
And I steadfastly claim that 805 is what bud drinkers drink to feel fancy.
You hit that wrong.
Throw them out. You drag them, Kristen.
Dude, you know what? You kind of. I've always wanted to. I've always struggled with the how to describe 805. It's kind of like you reached in my brain and
took that feeling and molded it into words.
Yeah, you absolutely did. My hat's off to you. That's exactly how I feel. And there's a young lady who always brings 805 to my cousin's house.
Mm.
And whenever I go, I'm just like, what do you have to drink? I'm like, I have 805. I'm like, I'll have water. It's okay. I don't need to drink. I'll have water. I bought a case of 24 at Costco because I know the brewery. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll try this, see what it's like. Oh, my God.
Oh, you had 24 of those things?
Oh, my God. The next party, I threw it all out there. I'm like, drink this.
Drink this.
Get rid of it.
Y'all can have this, but not me.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, this is kind of like a whole different face from the 805 that's everywhere.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm really happy with this, definitely. And thanks to Compton Eric for supplying us with this brew. Thank you.
Yay!
Yay!
Yay.
Yay.
All right, guys. Well, what's on our radar?
So, I have a couple of things on my radar, actually.
Shoot them all out.
I chose a comic book that's out this week, but also something that's came out this week, too, that just came on my radar today because it was shared in my comic book meetup discussion group. There is a Kamala Khan Ms. Marvel video out there.
Oh, my God. No way.
And looking at Jen has a Ms. Marvel T-shirt on today.
I do.
And while we were discussing, I looked at the shirt. I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot that video. I just saw it today. Oh, my goodness. This video today, as I was watching it, I was just like, I would watch that TV show. I would watch that show.
It's all I want out of life. It's literally, all I want out of life right now is a Ms. Marvel, Kamala Khan TV show.
It came across my radar from a friend who shared it from Nerdist. So if you want to try to find it, maybe we can share the link too on our Facebook.
Yes. Yeah.
But if you want to try to find it, we'll have it on our Facebook page so that you can watch it. But I saw it on Nerdist, and it is just so amazing. It shows Kamala in her home life, in her school life, being Ms. Marvel and fighting villains, and I think they hit her character and her personality and just everything on the nail, and just costume choices were straight out of the pages of the comic book.
That is so cool.
I loved it. So if you get a chance, definitely watch that video. But my comic book on the radar this week is American Gods. You do not know how many phone calls I have got for this comic book this week. And it's new this week, and it is a Neil Gaiman adaptation of his award-winning novel, American Gods. It is so super cool, too, that Starz is making this into a TV show.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, and most comic book readers, when they hear Neil Gaiman, the first thing that comes to mind is Sandman.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, and I read this first issue. I did not read the novel, so I had nothing to compare to when I went in reading it. But this first issue kind of just sets up the story of Shadow, the main protagonist.
Yep.
But it was so good. Mm-hmm. So the little short synopsis of the book is that Shadow's an ex-convict who becomes the bodyguard to a powerful deity who is looking to reclaim his lost glory. Now, if that doesn't just scream Neil Gaiman to you, then you don't know Neil Gaiman.
Exactly.
But this first issue was really good. I really, really enjoyed it a lot. Neil Gaiman is obviously the writer, and then the artists are the script and layouts are by Craig Russell, and then the art is by Scott Hampton. I'm not familiar with any other Scott Hampton work at all, but I really enjoyed the art in this first issue, and I really, really enjoyed the story. So I'm looking forward. It's only, it's a short short series. I'm not sure how many issues it's going to be.
I think it might be four.
I want to say four. Mm-hmm. That I read somewhere four. But either way, definitely, whether or not you've read the novel or not, pick it up. It was really good. I enjoyed it a lot. And now I'm really excited to see the TV show.
Hooray!
Yes, definitely. Did it say who did the cover art?
That looks like Dave McKeon.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Nice.
I know.
Yes, this cover is amazing, actually. We should take a picture and share that, too. Mm, but the cover is amazing.
Yeah. I love
Dave McKeon.
I recognize Dave McKeon's work when I see it.
Yeah, I was trying to see it upside down, and I was like, I need to know who the cover was.
Yeah. There was three covers for it, and Dave McKeon's was one of them. There was another one that was mostly all white. And
David Mack.
David Mack, yeah.
Yes. And another one of my favorite artists. Yeah.
And then there was another one that just featured, like, one of the gods on it. And
oh, my gosh. There's a little short... It's part of the story, but there's a little short excerpt in the back of one of the gods mm-hmm. who I'm just... I have to just share this. She eats this man with her vagina. And after I finished reading, I'm like, I'm all about this.
I vividly recall reading that scene in the book, uh-huh. and let me tell you, yeah,
I can see it. Yeah.
But
Bilquis is the name of the god.
Yeah, and let me tell you, reading it was 1,000 times more satisfying.
Oh, I'm sure. Oh,
wow. But the comic, I can understand that, because visually seeing that must be great. Like, oh my god. I love American Gods so much. Y'all have no idea. Oh my god.
So I enjoyed this comic book so much, coupled with Jen's enthusiasm, that she has talked me into reading the novel. People, I have not read books without pictures in years. So definitely I'm going to take on that undertaking, and I will report back.
You guys are going to laugh. I actually have not read American Gods. I think I do have a book, a hardcover book. It's damaged, like the cover is coming off. But I'm going to have to look for it and see if I can read it. But you guys are going to laugh at this. I actually own American Gods in book on tape.
Oh.
But I don't have a tape player, so I haven't heard it.
I have a tape player in my car.
No way.
Oh, yeah, she does.
Oh my god. Uh-huh. You know what? I'm going to look for it, and so that way, like,
that way I can quote unquote read the book.
Oh, there you go.
I mean, I have an hour and a half commute to and from work sometimes, so
yeah.
There you go. Hey, yes. So are you still gonna need that book? I need to know so I can know if I should reread it.
I actually, you know what? I'm very excited. I'm gonna start collecting those. You know what? I'm kicking myself right now because I saw David Mack and he had, I think, one of the variant covers. The variant cover he did,
mm-hmm.
And he was signing it, and I didn't purchase one.
I bet you there'll be quite a few variants at WonderCon this year.
I can't mm-hmm. wait.
Well, it was hot off the wall this mm-hmm. week. People were calling left and right asking if we had some, and we sold out, I'm pretty sure.
Have we ever seen this happen before, where there's a TV show coming out on the cusp of the actual comic book adaptation of a book?
I don't know.
No. Is this like the first time ever?
Yeah, I think so, because I'm recalling right now, because Marvel always does these prelude comics
yes.
for most of their yeah. movies, and first of all, the only reason we sell out is because we order, like, maybe one or two copies.
Yeah.
Because they're for our full customers, and no one ever comes in. And Marvel does advertise these things. They're like, oh, you know, read the comic leading up to this. But they never sell, yeah. and no one's ever interested. And same thing for a lot of TV shows that they've done. The only ones that I can say that it's kind of done is for is the cartoon ones that, it's either Dark Horse.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually Dark Horse and Boom that mm-hmm. makes them. Over the Garden Wall, Steven Universe, Avatar yes. The Last Airbender. Uh-huh. Those are the only ones that they sell that I can see that with frequency, and that's usually after the TV, the kids shows have yeah. come out. The only time I've encountered people not knowing that one of these was not a TV show was for Avatar The Last Airbender, and I asked one of the kids, they were from France, and I was just like, oh, have you seen the TV show? Have you seen the cartoon? They're like, there's a cartoon? And I was just like the look of joy on their faces. I was just like, dang, I did great today. Like, I love Avatar The Last Airbender.
I'm really happy for what I did for them.
Yeah, and I'm just like, I'm so glad that I was able to reveal to them that there was a cartoon series.
Jen,
like,
is shaping the minds of youth.
Oh, hell yeah.
One comic book at a time.
Nice. But honestly, yeah, this is the first big one that I can think of that we actually sold, because we ordered quite a few copies.
We did.
Mm-hmm. We ordered quite a few, and you know I set one aside for myself. Like, I was like, hands down, when they first announced it, I was just like, oh my god, thank you. Like, bless. bless.
Yes, it was on a lot of people's radar. We had people calling in way before it even came out, wanting to know when it was coming.
Wow. Yep. Excellent. what was I going to ask? On the cusp of you saying that there's a demon or a god that eats a man with her vagina, I'm wondering why this wasn't a DC Vertigo title and instead they went Dark Horse. That's pretty interesting.
Oh, you're right.
Interesting, yeah. I'm just noticing that right now. Yeah.
It was just something that I saw in the corner of my eye. I'm like, oh, it's Dark Horse? What?
Maybe Neil Gaiman wanted to keep it independent.
Not necessary. Because all the Vertigo ties into the DC universe. And this probably doesn't have anything.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, because, what's his name?
Midnighter? Midnighter was Wildstorm.
The guy with the trench coat and
Constantine.
Yes. Constantine is a crossover between. So they do a good job of letting you get the feeling that it's all the same universe.
Right, right.
And you see some other crossovers,
which I love too. About DC.
Yeah,
because I could read about I could read Constantine and Swamp Thing, and I can read about the young detectives and the young detectives and in Sandman. So I liked all that stuff.
Yeah,
I love that shit.
I've never finished reading Sandman, which I need to do.
You should.
In fact, I should probably go back to number one and read because.
You want this me to read them with you because you want to.
This was me when I first started reading Sandman, and it was before I even started working at a comic book shop. I read the first trade, and as I'm reading it, I was like, "What the fuck am I reading right now?"
Oh my God.
But like I've shared with you earlier, when I start something, I have to continue, and even though I haven't finished, I continued. I was like on the third trade, after I continued, I was like hooked, and I was like, I gotta keep going.
Gotta keep reading.
And the only reason I didn't keep reading is because at the time I wasn't working at a comic shop, and I was just when I would go meet Eddie, who was running the eBay store at the time for Jeffries, I would sit there sometimes and wait for him and just read him off the shelf.
Yeah.
Oh, and then he stopped going. He stopped doing his shift there at the shop, and so I didn't have access to the books anymore.
Yeah.
But now I have all the access.
All the priority.
Excellent.
Definitely. Tell me when you get to Fables and Reflections, because that is my favorite volume. It's my favorite one. It's anytime everybody's like, oh, where should I start? I mean, well, you don't technically have to go by the volume numbers. Like, you should start out with this one. I was just like, I love all of the Sandman, but Volume 7 is my literal fave. Mm-hmm. It is. Oh, God, I love that one so much.
Because I love them all. How many are there?
There's 10.
10 or 12? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, something like that.
There's 10 volumes. I know I know that wall.
She's the master of the wall.
I'm kind of in charge of our trade paperback wall, and so I have almost memorized that thing.
And do not try to do something your own way, because she will cut you.
I will. I will. Like, I don't like anybody messing with my wall. Like customers can do it because they're customers. At least they're buying something. But some of the other employees try to mess with my wall, and I'm just not like, my wall. You don't know how I do things.
Wow, I like that. I like that a lot.
What's on your radar?
Oh, shoot. Yeah, what is that on mine? I was like, wait, where was I going? No, on my radar. On my radar is, this was on my radar last time, but I couldn't think of it because I forgot. But it's a book. It's a Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls. It's really cool because, these creators of this book actually, were looking at, the library section for the kids, and they were like picking out where's the story where there's no lead female character in the story, and they picked out like half the wall. Which one has like a girl with no a girl character but with no dialogue, and they picked out half of that. So like there was actually no stories for children that represented strong female characters. So they made this book so that moms or dads can read these stories about real strong women
who made a difference in humanity.
Oh, their, it's a nonfiction.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I should have started with that, huh? who read them to their daughters or their sons while they go for a bedtime story.
Cool.
And they have stories like on Cleopatra, Amelia Earhart, Malala Yousafzai.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Am I pronouncing that right?
Malala Yousafzai. Yeah, something like that. I'm sorry.
Yousafzai, I believe. And its creator, Elena Bavoli and Francesca Cavallo, and they both created this book. And it's really cool. And those are just some of the women that I actually perused through, but they have all these other stories about women that have contributed to our society, that had ideas and had dreams and made these things a possibility and made it possible. And I think that's great, because that could just show the, you know, your young child, your young kid, that, you know, anything's possible and you can do anything. Just because, you know, there's not many books out there that have strong female characters in young storybooks. I mean, I just thinking about it, most of them are, they're all about, you know, Prince Charming coming to rescue you or waking you up with a kiss or saving you from the evil queen. I mean, I like to see little girls like want to dress like princesses, but I really like it when they're like, I want to be a doctor. I want to be a scientist. I want to be an astronaut. Mm-hmm. That makes me happy.
Yeah.
So I think this book really, sheds a little light on how we need that more in our lives.
I love that title.
Yes.
Yeah.
It reminds me of that Rebel Girl. But that song. But for you guys listeners that have kids and maybe you know, kind of put this in your like reading cue for your kids' bedtime stories. I'm sure you won't be disappointed.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So that's on my radar.
All right, and this is Jen, and on my radar is actually Headlopper. Now, Headlopper was a series before, and it was quarterly.
Mm-hmm.
It was a quarterly comic, so it came out every 3 months. But every time it did, the book was huge.
Yes.
It was huge.
Really thick.
It was really thick, and the artwork was absolutely amazing, and it was so much fun.
It was.
It was a fantasy/adventure comic that was absolutely amazing. I loved it so much. I'm a sucker for fantasy. I'm a sucker for well-done fantasy, and this was a well-done fantasy adventure.
It really was.
And it's about this one guy. And he's, like, super big and buff and ripped, and his companion, which is the beheaded head of a witch.
Uh-huh.
And she talks
to
him.
She is freaking amazing.
She is. She's amazing. She's funny. She's snarky. And she constantly keeps messing with him.
Yes.
But she helps him out at the same time.
Yeah.
So it's
So when you say she's snarky and kind of mean to him, but she helps him out, it reminds me of Salem the Cat. From Sabrina, like you said that, I'm like, oh, that sounds like Sabrina.
And I loved this this series when it was came out, and it had been the first volume is out. Mm-hmm. It collects, I believe, it ran for what, 4 issues?
I think it was 4. Yes.
Yeah, it was 4 issues, but they were all huge. So this thing is it's pretty big. It's pretty hefty to read. But if you want something that's kind of like along the lines of Conan with a little bit of Sandman thrown in,
no way.
Like legit. Like this is perfect. It's absolutely perfect. And so issue number 1 of the second volume, I guess you could say, it's Headlopper and, I'm forgetting the title.
And I had no idea it was coming out when I saw it on the wall this week. I was like, oh my gosh!
Same. I was just like, oh my god, it's back.
Yeah.
I was just like, I thought they were done, but no, they're not done. And I'm just like, bless. Prayer hands emoji sign. And it's just, I absolutely love it, and I read the first issue, and it's just as great. So either on your radar, pick up that first volume, which is amazing, or if you want to, you just want to get that number one that is out right now, go ahead and do it, because it's an adventure thing, and it's just like it's very much kind of those like you can pick up at any time. This dude is out trekking, and it's the start of a new adventure. So definitely recommend. Give all the kudos to it.
Nice, excellent, guys. that's been a really good on the radar. I'm very happy. I'm actually excited. I haven't collected single issues book, but these sound really promising.
Hey.
anyway, guys, we were talking and teasing that at the beginning of the episode that we're going to do a free giveaway. We're not going to say what we're going to give away, but it's going to be a little prize. It may be a prize basket of several things. Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun. So, listeners, listen up. What you have to do in order to win this prize or prizes, our first giveaway is you have to review us on iTunes, and we will pick, I wouldn't say the best, but we will
randomly pick out of all of the rates. The new rates, is that what it's called? The new
reviews.
Thank you.
Rate and review us, yes.
Out of all the new reviews between now and the end of April, we will put them all into a hat and we will pick a winner. And we're going to try to make this prize a really good one. And just keep in mind that I own a comic book shop. So I have all
Boom.
The good stuff.
Mic dropped.
She's gonna drop the mic, definitely. And also, I'm just gonna throw this out there because I just thought of it when you were talking about comic book shop. I will give out another small prize for the best review, the one that I feel like is heartfelt, like a really inspiring, interesting, unique review. Yeah, so try to be creative.
I want
to
know how I saved your life. that's it. Like, you just got to be epic about it.
I want to know how we inspired you to read the comic books we've been reviewing.
Yes.
Or how we changed your life or something amazing. I mean, you guys read comic books, I assume, so I'm sure you're very creative, interesting, wonderful people out there. So another little gift out for that. And we will, again, let the winner know who the winner is. And also we're going to announce it on the podcast at the end of April.
Yes. Cool. Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, thanks so much for listening. And, hey, get to writing those reviews, guys.
And
we
shout
gotta
out.
work.
And shout out to Comadres C Comics on Instagram. You can get us at Comadres C Comics.
And you can tweet us at Comic Comadres on Twitter. Shoot out some questions if you have anything nice to say. Or if you have anything bad to say, I'm here and I will fight you.
we come at me. Yeah, we just want you to talk to us, basically.
Yeah.
You can always find us on Facebook, in that you guys know. And also, what was it I was going to say? Thank you to Eric, Compton Eric, for supplying us with some beer. Thank you for listening. And guys, have a great day and get to writing.
Yay!
We have been your hosts. I am Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jennifer.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Ciao.